Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black gold, black gold. You
are. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kathy Bostrom from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Daily. How My Heart Unfolded at a Grief Retreat. Samantha Leal lost three family members in 2024. A year later, she was ready to tend to herself. By Samantha Leal. I'm in Phoenix, and I should be in Tucson. My flight rerouted close to landing, just as I had started to doze. A microburst had hit the area, the pilot informed us. Sorry about the inconvenience. We just want to be safe, he said, addressing us from the cockpit after landing. I was on my way to Miraval, a wellness-focused property where guests can enjoy everything from yoga to horse therapy to tarot readings. In existence for 30 years, and with other properties around the U.S., and one opening soon on Shura Island in Saudi Arabia, on the Red Sea, it's where I had decided to go for help with moving through that which had lingered with me for the past year, grief. In 2024, I lost my father, sister, and half-brother in a series of deaths that, my therapist assures me, would leave anyone reeling. While my father's, and in part my brother's, passing were somewhat expected, old age and illness, my big sister's passing descended like a storm out of nowhere, a microburst, an off feeling that led her from urgent care to the hospital, and in 24 hours, she was gone. I'm not new to grief, but I am new to these griefs. And as anyone who has experienced grief or death knows, experience doesn't make you better at it. The only comfort the experience brings is the dim assurance that you can survive it. But for many grievers, finding space and time to grieve isn't high on the priority list. Logically, it makes sense. Processing takes time and reflection. But with the haze of grief, the haze of death admin and feeling, well, everything and nothing at all, while also trying to pay bills, figure out new routines, and be a human, it all kind of keeps check out a grief retreat at bay. Yet, I couldn't help but feel like I needed to do just that. And I'm not alone. The global grief counseling market, according to some forecasts, is projected to increase from $2.73 billion in 2022 to $4.52 billion by 2029 globally. And the rise of grief rituals and grief retreats has been noted by the Global Wellness Institute. And here I was, headed to experience three uninterrupted days of workshops, sessions, and experiences to help me learn how to move with this state of being. Because as most of us grievers know, grief is not just a feeling, but a presence. Parts of my experience are set to mimic the formalized grief retreat they're offering in October. But really, the experience would be mine and mine alone, just like my grief. In 15 minutes, we were back up in the air, landing 10 minutes later. We made it. I had made it. It takes about 45 minutes or so to get to the property from the airport, and there are different accommodations, from rooms to villas. I was set up in a villa, a sprawling home that could hold many, but held one. The theme of Miraval is wellness, and my set of daily activities I'd be experiencing ran the gamut from spa appointments to energy healing to a private remembrance ceremony. Miraval is an all-inclusive property, sans alcohol, but you can order at the bar or get a glass of wine at dinner for extra. And while many experiences are included in your stay with a daily activity list posted, many experiences are also available to book separately at a charge, including spa appointments. The first night, I eased into the experience and property with sweet slumber, a massage that sounds exactly like what it is. I went to bed and didn't dream. The next day, I was thrown to the wolves, or rather the horses. equine therapy, also known as equine-assisted therapy model, or EAP, is an experiential form of therapy that includes equine activities or an equine environment. It is very popular at the resort, and it's easy to understand why, especially for animal lovers. The equine program manager, a woman who went from a lawyer to horse wrangler, talked to the small group of us, four in total, about the logistics. But soon we found ourselves in one-on-one conversations after selecting our horse. My horse picked me, actually, which is good because I was secretly hoping he would. He was a bit rascally, and I always admire a bit of ferocity in anyone. Our program lead was nice and understanding, but I could feel my throat clenching when we spoke about what I was feeling. I'm not the kid who ever spoke up in class. In fact, I hated it. And sharing my feelings doesn't come as naturally to me as I wish it did, mostly because I intellectualize them before feeling them. It's something that years of therapy has made me cognizant of, but self-awareness is only one step one. I'm not always able to share in ways that I want. Everyone talks about eldest daughter syndrome and middle child syndrome, but I think youngest children have a syndrome all their own. We are the sensitives who can palpably feel a family. We're often the ones who hold the emotional glue, sensing the shifts, absorbing the tensions, trying to keep things light when everything feels heavy. The balancing weight on a seesaw. We level in ways that make sense for our families. I was the comedic relief, leveraging truths in the way my family connected through laughter. But there's nothing really funny about grief besides the sheer absurdity of it. While brushing the horse's coat, I kept thinking how ridiculous it was to be standing in the desert, trying not to cry in front of a horse. But something about the quiet, the slowness, the way he leaned into me, falling asleep, it made the ache a little more bearable. After horses, I was headed to a psychic medium session with Scotland-born Alexandra Nicol. Another additional charge session. The first thing she told me was that I was highly intuitive, a person who channeled without thinking about it. "What the hell are you doing here?" she laughed. "You know what you can do." That and the rest of her words, messages from my family, scenes from the future, caught like fire through me, making me feel seen. For me, that's the power of psychics and mediums. Their real ability comes from seeing you, affirming you, and giving you answers that can help get you out of a rut. For me, it felt less about predicting the future or confirming the past, and more about bringing the present into sharper focus. Next, I headed to Mythic Revelations, Wisdom and Tarot, a class with none other than Nicol's daughter, Jessie Ray. This experience was definitely out of my comfort zone, a group class that led us through a visualization exercise before we revealed what we pictured during certain times of that visualization. You also had time to journal thoughts. At the end, you chose a tarot card to go along with your experience, and we all went around to share what our cards said. And even though three other women in the group class had the same card, the Chariot, they all said the same message while I did not. Same, same, but different, I thought. Another mark on how this grief was different for me, different for everyone. The first line of my message, harness your will to move forward with courage. Sure, Tarot. After a forgiveness meditation, I found myself wondering, is this even worth it? I had completed most of my scheduled sessions of the day with only an evening spa appointment left. Sitting at dinner, it's all inclusive, so of course I was making the most of it, I started thinking about how we assign meaning to the things we do. Grief has a way of stripping that away. Meaning becomes so much more arbitrary. Grief pulls the rug out from under you, knocks the wind from your chest, and leaves you scrambling to remember how to breathe. It reminds you how little control you have, how temporary this all is. And maybe hardest of all, it reveals who really shows up and how we, in turn, show up for ourselves. I felt a little ridiculous. I was trying to lean in, to be open, but it was harder than I expected to believe any of this might actually help, or better yet, heal. Looking around the dining room, I saw couples, parents with their kids, siblings, That one stung. There were a few solo travelers, but fewer than I imagined. And with such a steep price tag, I couldn't help but wonder, is this all just people trying to buy comfort? And if it is that really helpful? Like, yeah, we can all see butterflies and think of our lost loved ones, or smile when a song comes on that reminds us of them. But are these really signs from the beyond? Or are we just looking for connection to something, someone, that isn't there anymore? Is the sign really just the mind reaching for something to hold on to? I was starting to get into this existential spiral when I realized it was time to head to the spa. I was getting the ginger healer, a blend of a scrub and massage. The spa, which I had been to once already, was a device-free zone. Much of the campus was, in fact. A way to keep people present. I checked in and headed to the small waiting area, where a notebook was open. A guest book of sorts. People had started writing words of encouragement or reflection, short and long. Spend the money, do the things. Life is so precious. Trust yourself. Love those around you, human, animal, elements. Everything is not given, but present for you at this moment. I found myself wanting to document a few, so I quickly and discreetly took out my phone to snap a few photos of them. It was then that I decided to play a little game while I waited. Closing my eyes, I fanned through the pages, stopping when it felt right to do so. As I opened my eyes to read my message, I made an audible guffaw. Tears started forming. There, at the top of the page, a letter written unlike many of the others. Sam, it started. Sam, if you are reading this, you have been chosen for a spiritual journey, one that will have curiosity, adventure, stillness, and beauty. All you need to do is relax and channel your inner ocean. We will start in the massage room in a few moments, but feel free to ask any questions you may have. It was dated a month before this treatment, my treatment. A massage. My sign. No other message in the book started addressed to a person. Some had signed their name, but for the most part, they were omni-messages. This one was for Sam. This one was for me. The next day, I received a treatment called Mother's Blessing, one that has been raved about, and afterward, I understood why. The energy work session started with me lying down and her working through my body with her hands lightly touching me. "You feel betrayed," she said, and that opened up more than I realized. I did feel betrayed by these losses, life, people's reactions. Grief is complex, and the emotions don't always make sense. It's not just sadness. It's rage, confusion, guilt, numbness, and sometimes even resentment toward those who continue on as if nothing happened. That one word, betrayed, put shape to a fog I hadn't been able to name. In that moment, I wasn't trying to fix anything. I was simply allowing myself to feel what was already there, buried under the need to stay strong. And somehow, in that soft, quiet space, something inside me shifted. Not into peace, not yet, but into honesty. And that was its own kind of relief. Through my next sessions throughout the next 2 days, I listened to my innate sensors, my understanding of what it means to live, of what it means to be here now. I learned stress tactics, heard from others' journeys, and felt my emotions through my body thanks to yin yoga. I went through a self-compassion consultation where I validated that my brain and body are in survival mode, that I had every right to be angry, to be traumatized. "I hate to say it, but your grief is special," my wellness counselor told me. Cumulative grief, also known as complicated grief, was what I was experiencing. Stacked griefs. "Comparing grief is a futile exercise," I wrote in my journal, "but mine will take time." On my final day, I was signed up for Path of the Jaguar, a private energy-clearing ritual rooted in indigenous healing. My dad is Mexican-American with an indigenous background. My own 23andMe ancestry breakdown has me clocked at 25% native to the Americas. And our indigenous roots have always felt important, even if not fully understood. He used to tell us stories of the stories he was told, fragments of the Leal family history. Leal, meaning loyal, is a name I've always had a visceral reaction to, like it remembers something I've forgotten. That's how it often is with indigenous and Latin blood in America. Many of us disconnected from the earth and community our ancestors once moved through with rhythm and reciprocity. The memory lives on in the body, even when the path back feels unclear. My practitioner, Lolita Leal, greeted me. "I don't meet many people with my name," she laughed, asking if my roots went to Texas or California. "Texas," I said, thinking of my dad's birth state, though I live in California now. We talked about our names, about family. Her energy work made me feel light, like things were rising out of my body and into the ether. I always see swirls of colors in these moments of meditation or energy work. This was no different. Swirls of light and color, and I in a small way hoped they were returning to me. Parts of myself I'd lost in grief, parts I'd buried so I could keep going. Emotions I didn't have time or space to feel when the losses came fast and sharp. Finally, I had a private remembrance ceremony. Walking through a small labyrinth, there were no tricks, no shortcuts, just step after step to the end of a winding circle. My coach left me to journal. "You can write whatever you want," she said. "We'll then burn it if you want." The small fire burned in another area, where she waited for me to finish. As I wrote a whole page of my thoughts, one line gave me pause, as it rushed out of me before I even realized what I fully wrote. "I grieve you, but I grieve me too." Burning, an exhale, the wind returning to me. Afterward, we walked to the prayer tree, its branches heavy with notes, ribbons, photos, and names. A sacred archive of love and loss. My body felt a wave of frisson, a ripple of presence, of what once was and is no longer. And beneath the ache, a quiet joy. So many who were loved, so many who knew love, so many of us who are, were, and will be trying to process these deep losses. Is a grief retreat needed in order to process everything? Not necessarily. But time helped. And carving out this special time, here, with special moments of reflection and people to help me do just that, felt like a step forward. Like things were starting to move. For the first time in a long time, I didn't feel like I was stagnant. And perhaps most important, it gave me validation that I was processing as best I could. That navigating this was complicated because my grief was, and we, as humans, are complicated as well. And while every grief is different, the humanity of grief is what makes us that much more connected. And I could find peace in that, and finally, in me. That was How My Heart Unfolded at a Grief Retreat by Samantha Leal. Up next, what the oldest woman in the world can teach us about aging well. Scientists studied the life and biology of the supercentenarian, and new research reveals how she outlived everyone else, by Sophia Lodato. Everyone wants to know the secret to a long life. Is it luck, genetics, or hopefully, is it something we can control? For Maria Brañas Morero, who lived to 117 and a half, and was one of the oldest people in history, the answer may be a combination of all three. While she passed away in August of 2024, a brand new study published in Cell Reports Medicine on her genes, gut health, and lifestyle was just released and shed some light on why she lived so long. The researchers, with Morera's cooperation while she was still alive, tested her genetics, gut microbiome, immune systems, protein levels, brain activity, exercise, and more, and compared those metrics with a control group of 75 older women from a similar ethnic background. They wanted to understand what was so special about Morera that she lived significantly longer and in good health than the typical life expectancy. They found that, yes, a lot of longevity is luck of the draw. Morera's specific combination of genes was exceptionally effective at fighting infections and protecting her heart and brain. But unlike her siblings, she never suffered from age-related illnesses like cancer or neurodegenerative diseases, suggesting that her lifestyle habits also contributed to her iconic supercentenarian status. Here's what the researchers learned. Number one, eat your yogurt. Research has found that Morera's gut microbiome was rich in a probiotic called Bifidobacterium, while having less of the bad bacteria associated with frailty and inflammation in older adults. Past studies have found that more Bifidobacterium is linked to reducing inflammation and that it helps support a healthy metabolism. Interestingly, Morera ate 3 yogurts a day, which researchers said contained probiotic strains that support the growth of Bifidobacterium. No, we can't confirm that the yogurt she ate magically made her live longer. Sorry, Chobani. But the habit may have helped her microbiome, and by extension, her immune system, stay balanced. Number 2, go Mediterranean. In addition to her yogurts, Morera ate a balanced Mediterranean-style diet, which has been linked in study after study to better heart health, improved gut health, and reduced risk of dementia. Research also suggests that it can significantly support longevity in women. Yet another reason to consider the common sense eating plan, which asks you to eat lots of plant-based foods, particularly fruits, veggies, and whole grains, seafood, and healthy fats like olive oil, while limiting sugar, red meat, and dairy. Number 3. Take a holistic approach to well-being. Longevity isn't just about what you eat, either. Morera stayed physically active, a key part of aging well, by playing with dogs, walking, and spending time outside in her garden. She also had excellent sleep habits and an active social life, both of which have been linked to longevity. The researchers also noted she kept a strong physical and mental health throughout her life, despite the emotionally painful events during her last years, such as her son's death. All this is to say, there isn't a singular cure or one-size-fits-all strategy for longevity. If her story proves anything, it's that quality of life begets quantity, though upping your probiotics probably won't hurt. And that was What the Oldest Woman in the World Can Teach Us About Aging Well by Sophia Lodato. Up next, read this exclusive excerpt from Mitch Albom's first romance novel. In his new book, Twice, the author of Tuesdays with Morrie spins a magical love story about a man who can relive every moment of his life and the power of second chances, by Mitch Albom. The detective clucked his tongue. He stared at the gray-haired man slumped across the table. "Come on, friend. How did you do it?" Silence. "We can sit here all day if that's what you want to do." "Is that what you want to do? Sit here all day?" The small room inside the police station was hot and in need of paint. The only furniture was a wooden table and the 2 occupied chairs. The detective, Vincent Laporta, opened a roll of hard candy, plucked the top one out, cherry red, and popped it in his mouth. "Want one?" The man snorted a laugh. "What's so funny?" "The name. Lifesavers?" "Yes." "Wish you had one now?" "My life's been saved too many times already." Laporta waited for more, but the suspect hooked his fingers and looked down, as if praying. His face was tanned and unshaven, his jaw and cheekbones well-defined, maybe too defined, like a man who'd grown thin from an illness. His mustard-colored shirt and navy blue pants were badly wrinkled, as if he'd slept in them. "Let's go over the accusation against you," Laporta said. "Maybe it will jog your memory." He slid a photograph across the table. "In a single visit at the island's largest casino, you correctly played 3 straight roulette numbers, winning over $2 million. Then you walked out the door." "Is that a crime?" "No, but only because we haven't pieced together how you did it." "So, not a crime." "Look, friend, my job is catching casino cheats. I've been doing it a long time. Vegas, Atlantic City, now here in the Bahamas. What you did, you can't do without breaking the law. I see, the man nodded thoughtfully. May I ask you a question, detective? Go ahead. Why this kind of work? What are you, a psychiatrist? Just curious. Laporta smirked. Let's just say I don't like people who bend the rules. Ah, then you wouldn't like me. Laporta studied his tall, rangy suspect. He wore a small earring on his left lobe and no socks under his weathered loafers. Laporta guessed he was in his late 50s and not particularly well off. In that way, he was like any number of men you'd find placing bets at an island casino. But his attitude under interrogation was unusual. Normally, suspects were jumpy, perspiring, answering too quickly or too slowly. This man almost seemed bored. Come on, tell me how you did it. You got an inside guy? I've committed no crime. Three straight roulette numbers? You don't call that suspicious? Suspicion and belief can't share the same bed. What's that supposed to mean? It means if I told you the truth, you'd have to accept something you can't. Try me. The man squinted. No. You realize cheating a casino can get you sent to jail? Yes. For a long time? Time doesn't mean much to me. Why not? It's complicated. Laporta bit down on his hard candy. Tell me about a woman named Gianna Rule. The man's expression changed. Laporta perked up. Here we go. Stay with us. You went to a bank after you won that money, and you wired it to a Gianna Rule. We can find her. Bring her in. Maybe charge her as a co-conspirator. Is that what you want? The man blinked. Laporta leaned across the table. Like I said, try me. All right, the man said, exhaling. I had a bag when you picked me up. So, I'll need it. Laporta thought for a moment. Stay put. He rose and, locking the door behind him, went to his office and retrieved a faded leather satchel. He returned and handed it to the man, who reached inside and pulled out a composition notebook with a black marble cover. On the label were 9 handwritten words. For the boss, to be read upon my death. He pushed it across the table. What? Laporta said. I should read this? Only if you want answers. The detective leafed through the handwritten pages. What is it? He mumbled. The man almost smiled. A love story, he said. And that was Read This Exclusive Excerpt from Mitch Albom's First Romance Novel by Mitch Albom. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kathy Bostrom, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138.